everybody. Welcome to Music City Gold. We are part of the Penalty Box Radio Network, and we are glad to be on the air with you. This is our inaugural episode, and we are a fan-driven podcast. So I am one of your hosts, Kyle. With me are my other two hosts, Daniel.
Hello.
And Matt.
Hey, guys.
We are huge hockey fans, and we decided that we wanted to do a podcast. So here we are. So I'm sure if you're listening to this, you are a fan of the Preds. If not, we're glad to have you, and we look forward to being in your ears through this podcast for many, many, many weeks to come. So let's jump right into it. So what do you guys think about this hockey season?
It's very interesting. We had some long postseason runs with some upsets. And certainly didn't expect us to go as far as we did.
Yeah, I didn't either. I mean, I'm used to getting the early first round, second round bump, and then kind of wondering, what am I going to do for six more months until it's October? And now I'm kind of like, oh, we have less than 100 days until hockey, and we just got done.
It was one of those things. We just didn't find our consistency, ironically enough, till the start of the postseason.
Well, you guys are kind of like the Cinderella story, you know, the little kid at dad's office who actually does good for once instead of going out first round, you know. But yeah, like you said, you didn't quite find your consistency at the end till the end, but that's the time to get hot in the playoffs. So you guys had quite a great run there.
That's the beauty of NHL playoffs too. So.
It was amazing. Like, I worked downtown, and the level of excitement has been more than anything I've ever seen for any sport. Even the Titans, when they had their great run so many years ago, just the walking downtown and seeing the banners hanging everywhere and seeing the people just wearing the merchandise and people going, where'd you get this hat? Where'd you get this shirt? Where'd you get those pins? I think Preds fever just swept everything this year.
I mean, there was a lot of bandwagon fans, but on top of that, I mean, when you're growing a franchise, that's part of it. So
it was definitely
to be expected.
Definitely a franchise. So I'm a season ticket holder. So Daniel and I went to every single playoff game this year. He goes me to a lot of games, but this year of the playoffs, it was amazing to be inside the arena during the playoffs and even being outside. There was a couple of the away games. We went to the watch party in the park. Got there, didn't get the best seats, but even then had a great time dealing with people that, you know, for some of them, that was their first time to even really get into the game. So, you know, while you're there, you're answering questions for stuff. And even the very last game of the season, Daniel and I had two Pittsburgh fans beside us. This was their first game that they ever been to the arena. And they sat down within 5 minutes. One of the guys looked over to me and he goes, oh my God. He goes, this is so amazing. He goes,
yeah, he's like, this is totally different.
Yeah, he's like, TV talks about it. The NHL Network talks about it. He goes, but just to actually be here was something else.
The Nashville arena.
Yeah.
And credit to them. They were actually really nice Pittsburgh fans. So.
Yeah. Like, they told us that they actually were coming from North Carolina, because they're like, you know, we don't support the Hurricanes because, you know, well.
Who supports the Hurricanes?
that's they were like, you know, we go watch the Hurricanes, but we kind of just picked up Pittsburgh, you know, because we wanted a good team. And they said they literally were driving from North Carolina, contacted somebody that was going to be at the lake of all days for their tickets. They're like, I'm selling my tickets. We're going to the lake. Okay. And they said, we didn't even know if they were fake. We just decided to take a shot, and it turns out they're real. And they're like, here we are. And he was, when they actually, you know, when they eventually did win and get that last goal, I didn't feel bad for him. I was kind of happy. Like, I felt bad for us that, you know, we got to watch the Stanley Cup given to another team on our ice, which sucks completely.
Lifting it, kissing it, and walking
Gosh,
around.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that man lifting that cup. I was kind of like,
salt in the wound, eh?
When he was skating around with the cup, I was kind of like, I kind of want you just to trip while you're skating with the cup, and the cup just kind of just roll. So I'm like, you know, because, you know, it could happen. But the guy said this was his son's graduation gift. So on the flip side, that's a pretty cool graduation gift to go see a hockey game in Nashville for your graduation, and it'd be the cup winning game.
Right.
It was amazing. So a little bit about us. Like I said, we're all hockey fans. I got into hockey about 2 years ago. I've been following the team for a while, kind of off and on, but my actual first, I guess, immersion into hockey itself was 2 years ago back in April on the 2015 playoffs when we were playing Chicago. I had a coworker come up to me and he said, hey man, he's like, you got any plans for this Friday night? I said, nah. And he goes, well, you want to go to see a hockey game? It's a playoff game. I was like, sure. I'm like, who are we playing? He goes, we're playing the Blackhawks. Now, at the time, I didn't understand how big that supposedly rivalry was until then. And so he was like, my daughter's going to her prom, and I have this extra ticket. I was like, yeah, I'll go. Totally skipped the plans I had for that night and went.
Which was nothing.
Yeah, it was pretty much nothing. I was actually supposed to go to a service of some sort, but I kind of skipped it to go to this.
Nice.
And being there in the arena and where my seats are at now, I sit kind of behind the band stage. So I've got the long view of the ice, which sitting there, I enjoy that view more. Seeing the lengthwise, because you see plays develop compared to sitting sitting on the sides where you're kind of like you can see something happening, but you don't have the best view, I think, unless you're higher up.
That's what I was about to say. You're higher up, and we sit on the side that shoots twice. Yeah. So it's
Nice. By the way, one of the great feelings in the world is seeing that puck at the back of that net from that side.
And the air horns right above.
Oh gosh, I love taking new people too, and I don't tell them that the horn goes off right there. So when they get that initial, you know, Paul goes, welcome to the ice, you're Nashville Predators. And the horn goes off, and they're like, oh my God, what is that? And so it's like, it freaks them out. So I remember we won that night. I don't remember the exact score, but that was the night that got me hooked.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, I went home that night, looked the team up, started looking up stats and points and players, and just fell in love with it. So, I mean, what about you guys? How did you guys get into hockey?
You want to start, Matt? Born on the streets of Detroit.
I know.
Yeah.
The mean streets of Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess been into hockey my whole life. All of my family's from Detroit. So, and history, people who have been here for a while will know that when Detroit was Motor City, so maybe 25, 30 years, I don't remember how many years ago, 15, 20 years ago, they opened up in Saturn plant down here. So a lot of the workers that worked at GM plants moved down here. So many people from Tennessee now are actually proselyted from Michigan from years ago because they were factory workers at GM. So when we came, so we moved down here. My dad was a part of that. So we came down here. But yeah, all my family's from Detroit, and some of my uncles work for the organization and all that. So I've kind of been inundated with Detroit stuff my whole life. So,
which is nice because it gives us a outsider's perspective too.
Yeah, since so,
I mean, yes, you are a Preds fan, but obviously Detroit's your number one.
Yeah, I give you all a little perspective because I'm not all about Nashville quite like you guys, because while I like them because they're the local team, they're not necessarily my favorite team. But what about you, Daniel?
Well, it all started when I was 5 years old, 1998, in the inaugural season. Man, my parents took me to my first game. I got my awesome kids jersey with the old school Bridgestone Arena patch on the shoulders. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yep. I remember because you pulled the jersey out the other day, and we said you could probably still fit it.
No, not quite. It's more like a loincloth now.
You are a pretty skinny guy. I would like to see you try to get into it at least once.
No, that's for another episode. So, but anyways, yes. So I went to my first game when I was 5 years old. I mean, experienced it all firsthand, got my fang fingers and everything, and I've literally grown up watching them play. I mean, I've been to hundreds of hockey games now. In the last several years, obviously, I've gotten to the point where I got out of college, got a little extra money, so I'm able to go to more games. So
I remember a lot of people were like, how in the world is Daniel going to all these games with you?
I was like, $1,500 a ticket is not...
Yeah, I was like, well, that's the benefit of being a season ticket holder. You get the tickets at a discounted rate, which it was amazing to see that the tickets were going for so much. I know Twitter was, you know, going crazy over
$10,000 a ticket for glass seats.
Some guy spent $30,000 and some change on three glass seats.
Stupid.
And I was like, that's not a fan. That's a business expense.
Yeah, they're writing that off.
But it kind of shows you that this is kind of the year, I would say, that Nashville hockey finally hit the mainstream.
We weren't expecting it to, and then it just happened.
And what was crazy is that, you know, I'd spend my days at work, you know, when I was trying to be productive, but during the playoffs, you really can't be, productive. And so I'm sitting there scrolling through, reading articles from, you know, the Toronto media, you know, the Pittsburgh media, of course, and all the other teams that we played through. And all the media for the opposing teams was like, there is something here. And I'm kind of like, it's been here for a long time. You guys are just now actually getting the, oh my gosh, this is actually here.
Yeah, I mean, the Canadian channels had a catfish counter So for every catfish that was thrown on the ice, they were adding numbers to the screen in the bottom, like right or left. I can't remember.
Now, I will say, I did think we did it. We overdid the catfish a little bit.
Well, yeah. When Pittsburgh pulled the instrument of crime thing, that only made it 50 times worse. Had they just left it alone, nothing would have happened.
Yeah.
Nothing would have happened. But because they made a big deal out of it.
I might,
we got to throw 10 catfish on the ice.
I might make the mention that the only reason y'all throw catfish is because of Detroit throws. Yes.
Well, we did that to make fun of you. So.
Yeah. Little brother's got to make fun of big brother somehow.
You can basically
first playoff series, too.
You can basically say we kind of took Detroit's model and made it our own.
Well, we actually
modeled. It's a good model to take.
We modeled. I mean, no, for so many years, we modeled our scheme, like our whole game plan around Detroit. I mean, that for real, though. That was our big brother that beat up on us all the time.
It was, and, you know, when we actually did finally get over the hump, that was Detroit.
And Chicago reared its ugly head.
Chicago reared its head. And I think this year was finally the point where Chicago basically said, okay, we do have a rivalry because we swept them. And were you really expecting going into the playoffs?
That was unexpected.
That we were going to sweep them. That we would hold them to 3 points the entire series. And we would shut them out twice on their home ice.
That was the shot heard around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, am correct,
no
man.
Way
it was,
you would have told me.
It was.
Even being a Predators fan.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It was shut out on their ice twice, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Two
I was
nights
pretty sure.
In a row. It was incredible.
Yes. It reminds me because I didn't have to hear Chelsea's dagger.
Yes.
Which, you know, outside of Chicago.
Shots on those games, too. It wasn't just Peck. The defense looked fantastic.
It did.
In both those games. I mean, it was tons of block shots. We were playing that trap defense, too. And that was really, really ticking everybody off because they were saying it was so, like, boring hockey.
Well, to be fair, you say it's a lot about defense, but I'll credit Pekka Rinne with that. He was a brick wall.
He was. The Finnish wall. Then he became Swiss cheese later on.
No, got him.
Let's be nice to him. If you've not had a chance to read his article in the Players Tribune, it's amazing. I cried a little bit. So if you're listening to this and you haven't found it, go to Players Tribune and look up Pecorini's article where he basically talked about this season. And
his whole backstory,
he's
too.
He's excited.
Like, go look at his backstory, too. Like, from where he came from in Finland. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I didn't realize he played a sort of a... He modeled his glove hand kind of after like a baseball softball model back over there.
That's why his glove hand is so strong. I mean, he's always had a strong glove hand, so.
But it's ironic that he is from Finland, but yet he couldn't finish in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Be nice to him.
No.
See what I did there?
Yeah, be nice. Okay. Yeah, I feel like we're going to have a lot of this, like, eventually, you know, tension of the two diehard Preds fans and this kind of guy who can't make up his mind over here.
Right? I mean, he's still a fan, but...
I like to bring the comedic relief to the show.
Yes. I'm going to call you a... I think you do fit the term Pred Wing pretty good. So what do you think of this year is your favorite memory? Before we move on to other topics, what is your favorite memory of this year with the Preds?
I guess I'll have to give you all some credit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know... I always was harping about the bandwagon
fans.
He's
swallowing his pride right now.
Yeah. I would have to say, you know, you got some major attention during the finals, and the streets of Nashville was filling with people coming to these watch parties and whatnot. And I'll say 75% of those people aren't really hockey fans anyway. But
I'll agree with you.
But
I mean, there's a lot of bandwagon fans this year.
But the point is that Nashville has never had a professional sports team championship, so just the prospect of that maybe happening, and Nashville is a really rambunctious city anyway, so it has a lot of energy, and to drive a crowd out to get excited about something really is a nice cultural sensation. It feels really nice to the community, actually. So I thought that was, like I said, I equated y'all to kind of a Cinderella story, and I just felt that was really cool for y'all.
So where do you see this in the future? So we start next season. What do you think the expectations? Do you think we're expected
really
to go back to the Stanley Cup Finals?
There's no way you can be expected to go back to the Stanley Cup Finals. There's no way.
I mean, it's hard enough just to get there once. I mean, the fact that Pittsburgh repeated,
which hadn't been done in 20
and
years.
20 years, and
you know, the last
the
team to do it with
Detroit. Yeah, but a salary cap error too. So it's like, it's so hard to get back there. Granted, I feel like we have put in the pieces to do that. But once again, you have to have all the factors. You have to be healthy. You have to go in hot. I mean,
injuries have plagued you, and I'm always surprised about
the finals.
Yeah,
too.
They said that James Neal, before he was traded off to Vegas, was taking injections in his hand because he broke his hand.
Yeah, he actually got injected in the hand and then came back and scored the game-winning overtime goal in the Ducks game.
I bet you the man couldn't even feel his hand.
He couldn't. Well, he wasn't even taking shots in practice. He would skate, but he on the warm-up before, he wouldn't even shoot.
Hockey players are just bad mamajamas.
Yeah, I think the memory I have the most that I liked was watching Joey score that game-winning goal against Jake Allen to clinch the series against the Blues. That was the first time we had played them, and I think that was probably a tougher series than the Ducks. I think it was. Mainly because we have never played the Blues before in the playoffs.
And they had been hot, too. I really wasn't expecting y'all to beat them. So I thought that was going to be a better series than Chicago was for y'all, but...
It was a grinding series. I mean, look what happened. We lost Kevin Fiala in the first game. And yeah, what's amazing is he broke his broke his femur, and he's already skating.
Yeah, I mean, that was like a week or two ago. I couldn't believe he was already back on the ice.
So we're going to have him back.
Joey will be back.
Joey will be
that
back.
That killed us in the finals,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, that was devastating.
You remove our top point generator on our first line, the Jofa line, which was just eating up time of possession. I mean, you saw some of the stats in the first two, especially in the Chicago series. It was mind-boggling how we were controlling the puck. And then you break up that line right as you're going into the finals. I honestly didn't expect us to beat the Ducks after we lost Joey.
Yeah.
And then we somehow eked it out. It was a gritty performance, but then I was really worried. And then on top of, you know, some questionable officiating calls.
Let's not even get started on the officiating.
Just say that Penguins fan who sat beside us in game six, he even said, first of all, the game one wasn't offsides. You can't even clearly, how can you, I mean, seriously, it's not conclusive.
Sounds like y'all got some sour grapes over here.
Well, the offside challenge
it was rough.
Challenging a coach's challenge like that for an offsides, that's not what that was meant to do. That was meant for like very blatant, obvious stuff that the officiating's like, hey, you missed this.
Let's also talk about the no goal in game six where
the ref decided didn't skate over to find it.
Didn't skate over to find it. He was completely out of position.
He said that he thought they had it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did. From that angle, of course he didn't because he's completely out of position. But once again, also, Penguins fan agreed that should have been a goal. I mean, I think they called. There was a similar play earlier in the year, I think, in the Canucks game
where they were able to challenge it, but
the league reversed it.
The precedent was set. The precedent should have stayed, and it didn't.
So there's a lot of stuff that
you know,
hurt us.
And I love the NHL as a whole, but you were going to think that it wasn't just Nashville complaining about officiating this year. It was every other team.
Other teams were noticing it as
and
well.
You should think about the fact that if your entire league in the playoffs is saying, hey, your officiating's kind of messed up, you would think one of the things they would do this coming off season for the refs is goes, all right, guys, let's go back to the basics. Here's how you properly officiate.
Well, I think hockey, one of the things I like as a whole is I find that the officiating isn't as obtrusive as other sports. Like one thing about football in America is the officiating, and there's a lot of like questionable calls and things. There's a lot of gray areas and things that affect everything. Well, hockey is a much more clean cut as far as rules and officiating. It's really, really mimics soccer. And so throughout the whole year, you don't have very many officiating calls and questionable, what's the word I'm looking for?
Borderline calls. I mean, most of it's pretty clean cut, like you said, but in certain circumstances when a ref completely just misses something, like that one where they waved it off, obviously he didn't even have it. Toronto needs to step in and be like, hey.
It's okay. Like, people are people, and they're going to make mistakes. Well, that's fine and well. Hockey generally is above that as far as officiating. So it's really sour when you see a rare instance like that happen in the finals because it's devastating. It makes such huge effects.
I think at that point, if you're going to like a final game, what I would do if I was them, I'd be like, okay, you got your regular season refs. People that, you know, this is their first time doing it. You know, even to get to the NHL level, you've got to have a good track record of officiating to begin with. But when you get to the playoffs, that's where you need your top of the class. And even then, when you get to the finals, that's where you need like your top four, top two linesmen and top two refs. Be like, your entire game for this series is reffing these six to seven games because we need the best on these. I think it's how it should be. It shouldn't be that, okay, you guys got this game, you guys got this game. Because at that point, you start putting in parity, and whatever one guy might think might be something different than somebody else.
I mean, I agree. I mean, as far as expectations for me, I kind of want to see us get, one, a higher seed, because the last 2 years we've been wild card, and I think that also has...
Yeah, y'all scraped in this
year. Yeah, and we once scraped again, in. That goes back to the consistency thing, and I think this year we'll start off more consistent, considering we'll have... You're going to have PK from the start. You're going to have him through training camp. He won't be injured for as long. Like, there was a lot of stuff. And then, PK shut it down as far as defense in the playoffs. He was amazing. He wasn't the person lighting the lamp all the time. He just shut people down.
Kane in Chicago, yeah, Kane. Tarasenko in the Blues. You've got Kessler.
Oh, I love Tarasenko.
And the Ducks. And then you've got, you know, Crosby and Malkin. Those are some of the best players. And, you know, the fact that we did so well against these best players until we got to the series, to the last series where we started having, you know, some issues.
That's what I was saying. We're going to be gelling more, hopefully, from the start of the season. I think goal number one is to get a higher seed, to get more home games. Obviously, that was a factor this year.
And what was even good about being in the Central was we didn't travel as much.
Yeah, totally. Being in the Central, we won't travel as much. Getting those home games stats were obviously in our favor for home games for us. I mean, that didn't hold true for a lot of the other arenas, but for us it did. Get the home games, get into the playoffs as a higher seed, and then go from there. It's like that every year. You got to get to the playoffs and then...
Well, I tell you what's nice, home field advantage is one thing, but what's really nice to me, the thing that stands out about getting a higher seed is you don't play a one seed, which is really critical. Because if you are not a one seed yourself, you think, well, theoretically, we will lose to an 8 seed should lose to a 1 seed. Well, even if you're not... wrong.
Wrong.
Right. Tell that to the brooms outside the arena.
Boom. Roasted.
But... Yeah, but no, statistically speaking, yes, you are
correct. Give yourself
you are correct.
A better chance at success that way, at least making it one round or two rounds. So we talked about expectation for what you think Nashville should do next year. Where do you think that line is? I think personally, like I said, it's a little unreasonable to expect them to go to the Stanley Cup Finals next year. I think personally I would be happy with just making a playoff berth, and then anything after that is a bonus, since it tends to be just it's all up in the air anyway after that.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, I mean, you got to get to the playoffs, and then anything can happen. We proved that this year. Anything can happen once you get to the playoffs. I mean, our team is obviously they have the passion and the desire to... I mean, you saw those first couple games in Chicago. It looked like we were outperforming them. It looked like we wanted it more.
I remember seeing...
We looked so much more hungry. I mean, obviously, Chicago's won plenty of cups here recently. Yeah. So, we looked so hungry. And I guarantee you, coming two games short will only make us that much more hungry this year.
You look like the stray cat that was hunting for scraps in Chicago... was like the fat cat on the block that has already just had a couple nice meals, a few Stanley Cups recently, so they're good to go. So they really didn't want it as bad.
Oh, I mean, they were like hawks and four.
But on paper, they kick your guys' butt. But what really happened was y'all was hungry, y'all got them junkyard, dirty dog efforts in there and got the job done.
That's why, we just get to the playoffs and we can worry about it, but getting the higher seed, that's going to aid us in how far we go.
Yeah, and I think you guys have all got good points. You know, we've got to have consistency for one with the players. The atmosphere also helps with the playoffs. But you know what really helps you with playoffs? Having good leadership. And so it makes us. Yeah, which brings us to the fact, do you think Mike Fisher is going to come back this year?
Well, is he still praying? Is he still on his knees?
Praying is fine. Let the man pray. Just, do you think if you was him, would you come back this year, knowing that you were two wins away?
Oh, I'm coming back. If this is my decision, he's been in the Stanley Cup now twice, and he hasn't been able to hoist the trophy. And knowing the caliber team that we have coming back, and now, I mean, you got to factor in, which we'll talk about some of this in a little while, some of the people that we've signed. I mean, you got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, but if you come back and you don't do as well, wouldn't that be a, that would just be a letdown. I wouldn't want the end of my career to go out on a
low fizzle. Note. Yeah, you don't want to fizzle, but I mean,
I would almost be happy with just being content with going out as it is.
I mean, he still played pretty elite hockey, though. You can't say he was terrible.
I mean, he's all right. I mean, I'll put it this way. Regardless of what he wants to do on a personal level, I'm okay either way. Take him or leave him. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Well,
yeah.
Didn't he have 40-plus points this year?
All right, so Mike Fisher for the 2016... Yeah, I mean,
he was still producing.
2017 season, yes. He played 72 games. He had 18 goals, 24 assists for a total of 42 points.
42 points?
42 yep. points. That's really good.
Really good.
That's what I was trying to say. He's still playing well.
He had seven power play goals, too.
Wow, I actually didn't realize he had that many points.
No, he's up there.
What was that, Kyle? 40-something? 47?
He had 42 points. 72 games played. He had 18 goals and 24 of those were assists.
And he was injured a couple of games in the playoffs, too.
That's actually really good.
So he's still playing. That's what I was trying to say. He's still playing at an elite level.
And he had a shooting percentage of 15%. That's pretty high.
And he's a leader, too. I just can't see him hanging up his skates.
He is good leadership. I'll tell you what. He has a different leadership role than Shea Weber does, but he at least is a veteran voice in his...
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still up in the air. I personally think he comes back for 1 or 2 years, and then that's it. I don't see him playing more than 2 more years, for sure. I mean, he's got a family now. He's got a kid, and I think that was part of some of the things he was wanting to.
But I think his wife will be fine with him coming back, though. She understands.
It's not about the money.
She's got the passion.
It's not about the money. I mean, Carrie Underwood is making way more, and that's sad considering what Mike Fisher is making, but she is making bank too.
Well,
so it's not.
And she totally supports him either way. I mean, you saw her during the playoff run. She was singing the anthem for one, which, by the way, I am totally cool with everybody where the rest of the anthems for next season being done by country singers, because you know who's no longer with us? Dennis K. Morgan is not with us.
Is it confirmed that he's not coming back at all?
Yeah,
he's
not coming back.
Whiny baby.
Ever since he got real sassy about it. And you know what? I know the horse has been beat on it, but you know what? It's Music City. If someone came up to me and said, "Hey, Kyle, we know you sing our anthem for us, but we kind of want Carrie Fisher and some of his other peoples," I'd be like, "Let him do it.
Yeah.
Let him do it."
Put it this way. Nashville is country music capital, and we're known for music, so these people that sing our anthems, whether it's
that's Princess Leia. That's one reason why she didn't take on the last name of Carrie Fisher. I wanted to correct Kyle, but
whether it's
Carrie Fisher Underwood.
Whatever.
Well, we can always call Mike Fisher Mike Underwood.
No.
Well, put it this way, though, they are nationally recognized. Nobody knows this, whatever that guy's name was. Like, who cares about that guy? Nashville, it's fun to listen to their anthems because they're nationally recognized people. So you mentioned veteran leadership with Mike Fisher, and we had recently acquired P.K. Subban. So I don't know. I guess you guys do, but probably not all of our listeners know. You guys traded him, got rid of Shea Weber for him, and from what my understanding was, that was part because of the veteran leadership. Apparently, P.K. Subban didn't quite fit in with the mantra of the Canadiens very well.
It's his attitude and kind of like they're much more stoic up there.
Yeah, close to the vest, straight-laced. But so how do you think in transition, in that swap, how do you think that P.K. fits in Nashville atmosphere?
I think he fits in great.
Oh.
Nashville itself is just a very electric town, and he fits in so great. Again, look at the playoffs. he was out there energetic. He was doing things. Even the point that Mike Milbury was like, well, he's being too much of a, you know, whatever out there. It's like
he's looking like a clown dancing around, even though it's funny because literally he does that before every single game. So Mike Milbury had no idea what he was talking about.
I think
he's carrying Listerine around.
Yeah, I think Subban does great.
I mean, like, it matches Nashville's personality. Yeah. I mean,
put it this way, he is really polarizing. A lot of people hate him or love him or love to hate him, but he has a lot of energy, and it really does match that Nashville environment. And really, I did some kind of reading about him. He has a couple charities, like he started some kind of
a
school with his charity.
He's got the Montreal.
The Montreal Canadian. It's like a hospital wing that he opened up for children. It's like, the dude is awesome.
So I don't know what people, why it is they don't like him. They don't say it's a good fit because he's a charity worker. He's a really vibrant personality, a lot of energy. How can you not want to be around that? I remember when he first came here, he was hanging around with the Nashville Titans on their field, hanging out, getting in with the community. I've seen him a few pictures at some of the bars down downtown singing or whatever.
Yeah, he instantly became a part of Nashville and starts growing. Like, I think it was the other day, I follow him on Instagram, and he was somewhere, I think it was at a Kings of Leon concert, kind of locally, obviously, Nashville-based band. And he was just like, oh, supporting them. And he was pointing up to the sky, doing his little, you know, normal kiss thing. And then he was saying Nashville, you know, like, it's all about supporting Nashville, supporting the community around
a hockey team and a game that he went to Vanderbilt. And he had the children at Vanderbilt, right? The kids in Montreal.
Yeah, it's great. He's already, like, making connections that way. So.
He's an awesome guy. I don't know why people don't like him. And he seems to be a pretty seamless fit for Nashville here.
I like him. I think he'll do great.
And I liked PK before. I liked him when he was in Montreal.
I know. Yeah. And now I like him even more, getting him here and seeing his personality
firsthand. You see a little bit
firsthand.
More of that personality here.
And then also,
because we follow Nashville more than we follow Montreal, obviously.
Yeah. And then just seeing how well he is kind of finding his role. He used to be that guy, you know, taking all the shots up at the point, trying to get, you know, doing his little sniper move after he scores a power play goal. But, I mean, his defense in the playoff was fantastic. He's getting into our system. He literally got in our system. Credit, we have a really great defensive system. A lot of teams will say that. We're smothering. And he finally found it, and they finally clicked in the playoffs, and that's what I'm expecting more of this year. If he can add a little bit more of the offensive side, I mean, obviously that's part of Nashville's game plan.
And that would
be
help
to generate going forward, having our defense act. We always have active demon.
And if you talk about a one-for-one between him and Shea Weber, your team used to always, that was what they do. They would just feed Weber.
It was so predictable.
Yeah.
We gain entry in the zone on a power play. Cycle, cycle, cycle. Shea, slap shot.
Move out of the way.
I move out of the way. Everyone duck. You're going to get a broken hand. But it's, I mean, it was so predictable. It worked sometimes, but it was just so predictable. You can't have that in the league.
I think moving the Shea to Montreal, I think, was the step that basically signified that we were actually moving away from our traditional defensive structure and actually going embracing the full offensive defenseman.
That was a big move, but I think that was a good move on you guys' part. And you talked about how you fed Shea Weber a lot. Well, that was a predictable move, but at least the guy you got in return is an offensive defenseman. He's a two-way defenseman, so he at least can supplement what you think you might have lost with Weber being gone.
Go look up the GoPro video of him.
The skills
video. Oh my gosh, it's incredible.
You'd think he's a forward because he got one. Crosby has one, and maybe somebody else. But
yeah, I mean,
he looks like a forward. He's got some handles.
Yeah.
So I mean, do you think PK would possibly be somebody who gets the A this year? Because since Neil got sent to Vegas in the expansion draft, we're now down an alternate.
That's a good point. He's got the experience.
Is this with Mike coming back?
Yeah,
with
Fisher coming back.
Well, obviously Fisher's going to be captain if he comes back.
Yeah.
The question is, has he served his time here long enough to merit earning an A yet?
I don't think it matters.
I could see Forsberg, maybe.
I mean, if you were to ask me today, who gets the additional A? Yeah, we got Forsberg who could possibly get it. I'd say maybe even Ellis gets it.
Oh, Ellis was a warrior in the playoffs. Man, I love that man so much this year. He that last game,
he was my favorite player in the playoffs for y'all.
He was super injured. I mean, remember at that time, we had no idea what he was suffering, but it was some sort of back injury that he had in game five.
Did they confirm it was a back injury?
His back was hurting from carrying the team too much?
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Was it a leg injury or a back injury?
No, it was a back injury. And then in game six, that man had like two straight on like, blocks wall and goal because he always does that. I mean, off the thigh, and he's like limping back into the bench, and you can tell he's hurt still, but he's still taking shots. I mean, he was a warrior. That beard was fierce all year.
He was
man,
the man.
Y'all's
best consistent player in the playoffs.
Oh, man, he started lighting it up too. First two rounds, power play goals. So, yeah.
The beard.
He could possibly be an alternate. I like Forsberg.
I like him as good in the air.
Ellis would be a good one. I mean, I really would love to see PK, but it really comes down as to whether the coaching staff deems him fit considering his time here. I think his personality, though, is like all Nashville. I mean, it's Nashville in a bottle.
I think it might be a little premature for him to get it since he's not even spent a full year here. I do like Ellis getting it. Forsberg, yeah, y'all just signed him to a long-term contract. He's still a little young. I don't know. I'm not quite sure. But I like any of those three. Who's that, two or three? Yeah, Ellis, Forsberg, and PK. I like all those three options for getting the alternate.
And that'll really also depend on Mike Fisher. That's
yeah.
The linchpin of it all. So,
speaking of Mike Fisher, that leads us to our next topic. If he doesn't come back, we did sign quite a few people in free agency. So for those of you who don't know what free agency is, free agency for players is players that have been released from their club, they've had their contract expire without a renewal, or they just weren't chosen to come back, and teams will buy them out, so they're free to go to other teams. So Nashville picked up a couple players in free agency. The biggest names was Nick Bonino from the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is ironic because they literally just beat us. Now he's coming down here for a chance to play. He has spent at least the last 2 years behind Sidney Crosby
and
Malkin, so I believe this gives him a chance to shine on our team. We got him for a pretty good deal. We pretty much paid for his salary by sending Colin Wilson to Colorado for a draft pick.
Playoff Wilson going.
Yep. Poor playoff Wilson. He just couldn't bring it this year, and they sent him on. But they did say that was already having talks with him about him going somewhere for a fresh start. And let's be honest, Colorado needs all the help they can get. They had a terrible season. So I think it's a good place for him to go and get a fresh start, because that team, for as much as I feel bad for them, they can only go up from here.
It was one of the worst teams in like the last 20 years. So.
You know how bad their luck even went? They pretty much finished dead last in the season.
I know where you're going.
Yeah.
And they didn't even get the number one draft pick.
See the memes of their general manager.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we picked up Nick Bonino. His salary is pretty much paid for by the moving of Colin Wilson. And we picked up Scott Hartnell from the Blue Jackets, who reunites with the Preds because we're actually the ones to let him go, and he went to the Blue Jackets. He was pretty much a steal. I know we were reading about it. We're talking about before we started recording that he was pretty much called the steal of the free agency. We got him for a $1 million contract for a year.
For 37 points last year. I mean, that's incredible. And I think Matt and I were kind of chatting this up beforehand. He's a left winger, so that was basically our Neil replacement. And how many points did Neil have total on the year? I mean, it's price, though, we get rid of Neil's contract and we replace it with a $1 million contract for Hartnell.
James Neal last year for us, this season, he had 70 points. I'm sorry, 70 games played. He had 23 goals, 18 assists for 41 points.
I mean, it's a direct replacement for him. For $1 million, you're not going to find a better deal.
He had 41 and Hartnell had
37.
That's...
But look at the contract difference as far as millions paid out. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Like I said, $1 million, that's amazing.
And Matt, I know you guys can't see this, but Matt has tons of papers all around him of everything. How much did we pick up Nick Bonino for?
Let's see.
Was it $4.1 million a year?
That was
4.1 per year.
Sniped it.
Yeah, and we've got him for 4 years.
Deal.
16.4 million. Yeah.
Which is an average of a little over 4 million a year.
That puts him, he's the number three forward in our cap space. First is, so going into the 2017-2018 season, the cap hit is as follows. The most expensive forward we have is Philip Forsberg at $6 million. The next one is Craig Smith at $4.25 million. And Craig Smith doesn't become a...
better, though, at the end of the playoffs after he got injured. Yeah.
We've got Craig Smith for an additional 3 years. We don't... Forsberg's contract doesn't come up until 22-23. Nick Menino then slides as number three forward at $4.1 million. And we've got him under contract until 21-22. Then, after that, Scott Hartnell slides in into the fifth spot at $1 million. So, interesting, we're talking about the cap here. So, the Predators have got $20.25 million in cap space given to the forwards. We've got $24 million into the defense. So, our number one hit on defense cap-wise is P.K. Subban at $9 million. Got him locked up until 22-23. Next is Josi at $4 million. And we've got him until 2021.
That's actually not that bad, though, considering...
Yes, and then we've got, so goalie-wise, Marek Mazanik is not coming back
to the
team.
Yeah, he's gone.
We've got Saros, who I think is a great backup replacement, and he is the future face of the goalie part of our franchise.
You're going to see him take more reps this year's first games.
Was it this year that Rene got hurt for a couple games and he stepped in and crushed it, or was that last year?
This year they kind of sprinkled... They were rotating goalies out from our minor league team, so they essentially they had UC and
they were flipping UC and Merrick back and forth, and a lot of people freaked out when it happened because yes, we know Mazanik was not the best goalie, to be honest. I watched him play several games and I just did not like his playing style. He didn't look prepared. He looked like he was uncomfortable in the net. So they'd flip him down to AHL where he did really well. And let's be honest, the NHL is a very high level, and there are some players that they cannot compete at an NHL level. They're more of you're an AHL level goalie,
like
or
a
players, and that's nothing to be ashamed about because you're still playing professionally. You're not doing no amateur men's team or pee wee team.
Mike Ribeiro level.
So what do you guys think about our signings for the free agency? I mean, do you think we did well? I think we did great.
For the cost, oh yeah, I mean.
I tell you, that Scott Hartnell deal.
Yeah, that was a steal.
That was awesome. And I tell you, I really like Bonino, too.
And it's actually, I mean, on paper, though, $4.1 million a year for that type of production and a solid center who was scoring even more points when he was getting more ice time. And he'll probably be second line center.
I still thought he shined pretty well in Pittsburgh behind Crosby and Malkin and them, but I still picked out Bonino out of the whole bunch. I like him a lot.
So where do you think Benito's going to fit into our lineup?
Second line center.
That's what I think, too, second line center.
I think he'll have more responsibility, more ice time. Dude's got a great shot, too. I mean, we saw it.
Well, that's – you got to figure in where Fisher is in that deal because
– if Fisher comes back, he's third line.
He's third line center.
So you've got Fisher – as for centerman, you would have Fisher one – Johansson to...
No, you'd
Johansson
have Joey.
Would be
Joey
one.
Would be first.
Joe Feline.
Okay. You'd have Joey first line. I'd say you could put Bonino on the second.
Fisher
third. And give Sissons the fourth line.
Yeah. And Sissons, I mean, he really stepped it up in the playoffs because there was that one...
He had that hat
that
trick.
One game where Mike was out against the Ducks and Joey had just gotten injured. And then Sissons got moved to first line. And then he had a hat trick.
I thought he did well. They showed that they've got the potential, and I think, you know, some people see the fourth line as kind of like the motion. You know, you don't want to be on the fourth line because you don't. Let's be honest, you get barely any ice time. It's kind of like being a third pairing on the defense. You might play five minutes the entire night.
It's just a buffer to give the higher lines rest, really.
But it's so critical, though. That
if you don't have the depth,
that
then you
line.
Overwork your top line, and then they're going to be too wore out.
Exactly.
And you've got to have a good fourth line because you see a lot of goals scored against teams' fourth lines.
And really, a good coach will snipe that. And once they see that fourth line of your team come out, or whatever, your last pairing, they'll step in and let their number one line come out against your weak line.
That's the whole icing strategy. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it also helps no matter who's the home team gets last change. So, okay, so we've got that. So I've been following a lot of different people on Twitter trying to get a good idea for our lineup. So I think the best lineup I've seen so far is going to be the Jofa line, of course.
Obviously, that's top. That, I mean, they dominated.
I would say this is from Michael Gallagher, who's also part of the Penalty Box Radio network. He says that he believes the lineup should be Jofa, Fiala, Bonino, and Auberg, which I agree with that. Third line would be Goudreau, Yarncroak, and Smith, if Fisher does not come back. And then the fourth line would be Hartnell, Sissons, and Watson. And I think that's a very good lineup.
What kind of, but you look at an overarching theme here. Shea Weber, you guys traded him. That was your captain. And now you've got Fisher stepping in as captain. And then if he goes, then that's two captains you all have replaced in less than a year. And isn't your assistant coach, Phil Housley, going to be
Buffalo? He's now the head coach for Buffalo.
Buffalo. That's some serious leadership that y'all are going to be missing now.
Well, every team's got transition. I will say I hope Housley does great in Buffalo, but I'm excited for the fact our power play might change. Yeah. Our power play was abysmal, and I think there was no better example than Game 6 in Nashville, the Stanley Cup Final. Oh, well, even though we had a bad goal, we had at least four power play opportunities that we did not capitalize on.
The special teams will make you or break you in the playoffs.
And that's
no doubt.
Yes, Phil's defensive system will live on, but I'm so excited to get someone else in here with some fresh ideas for power play. Because I think our big thing was gaining entry into the zone on power play looked horrible.
Okay, like, I'm not a fan of the drop pass.
Hey, oh, the drop, hey, the dump and chase? No, let's not dump
get
and chase.
Get it out of my face.
Dump and chase, drop pass, change it.
No.
You need to have on your...
Look at Pittsburgh, man. When they got in the zone, it was just like they would carve in, kind of do a hook, come back up almost to the blue line, and it would allow everyone to get in. They could start passing, and they could start generating shots quickly. That's the key. Where we're dumping and chasing for at least half the power play. I mean, it was rough watching it last.
I was noticing that. You guys are on the power play, and you can hardly even gain entry in the zone, and they're a man down.
Yeah, that it was terrible. I think whoever is
the top person for the power play one, power play two units, I think their job should be you need to get that puck past the blue line. Don't dump and chase it. Don't drop past it. Just power forward your way in. Take it to them. Make them work for it. If they want to clear make them work
chase
for it. Because if you dump and chase and you drop pass, you're basically letting them get it and throw it back. It's terrible. So going back to free agency, since we've had our gripes about the power play, I will say a speed last night on the power play, RV was a beast on the power play, led us in shorthanded goals.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
penalty kill, you mean. Yeah, he
yeah, penalty kill, my bad.
The most, I believe, in the league as far as shorthanded goals. I think we were, as a team, had the most shorthanded because I think Smith had one in a game, too.
Joey had one. Victor Arvidsson had five of them.
Oh, my God.
I tell you,
five shorthanded goals.
Forsberg had three of them.
I tell you, another guy we haven't mentioned yet who really impressed me in the playoffs for you guys, a hard-working guy, is Auberg. He was a flying fool. He was so fast.
He's making some plays.
Man, well, he was a hard worker.
That's why they're saying he's probably going to get bumped up to the second line. I mean, and he looked great.
He really stood out to me.
I think his
time
in the Admirals is done.
Oh, no, dude, he had that game winner. He's the Ducks, correct?
I believe so.
Oh, my God. Where he crossed. Oh my gosh. It was one of the nicest carvings. He got into the zone, cut back across, front of the net. Whew. So nice.
It was amazing.
So nice. He is a great find from the Admirals. Our farm team's doing great. So
the one person we did pick up in free agency that I'm not sure about. Well, we didn't pick him up free agency. We traded for him. We picked up Alexi Imelin. What do you think we're going to do with him?
Yeah, I forgot about him. That was from Vegas, correct?
Yes, we got him from Vegas. And we sent Vegas a 2019 third-round pick for him. So what do you think he is? Do you think we're going to carry him as an extra defenseman, or do you think he might be a trade for the, quote, fable Duchesne that we seem to have a...
There's no way we're not going to get
I don't think we're going to get him either. I think if it had been done, it would have been done by now. Because I read some of the stuff that he was... that the Islanders people said that they were trying to get from him, and man's crazy.
Who you mean their GM?
Yeah, Sakic trying to get from the Islanders.
Oh my God, yeah, he.
They were saying like he wants an NHL ready defenseman, picks and prospects. And it's like that's way too much. So I don't know what we're gonna do with him. I know Poyle picked him up.
I like him, but yeah, I don't know how high he's going to go on your guys' roster. If I'm looking, if you got big four, you got Josi Ellis, Ekholm, and Subban as your top two pairings. That leaves Alexei Yemelin and Yannick Weber on the last line there.
The only thing I can see about them picking up Alexei is that, in fact, he played with Weber and Subban in Montreal.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
That's a good point.
It says right here, it says he has skated in six NHL games, all in Montreal, since 2011, and he got sent to Vegas. So last season with the Canadiens, he posted 2 goals, and he had 10 points, but he had 71 penalty minutes.
Oh.
So.
Oh, don't worry. We picked up Cody McLeod last year, so we're used to penalty time.
They said total for the 380 career games he has played, he has posted 14 goals, 72 points, and 323 penalty minutes. So I wonder if he might not be a third pairing defenseman if we keep him, who might be a little muscle.
Yeah.
We also,
which is why you guys picked up McLeod.
Well, we also are overlooking draft picks too. We also had some
good draft picks.
And obviously our first round draft pick, the Eli Tovanen, which I'm hoping
I got to watch him at the prospect game that played a week ago Friday.
Yes.
Very good.
He looks great. He's a left winger too. So, once again, obviously we were vying for people for left wingers because of Neil being gone.
He's spending this season in the KHL for Jokerit.
Correct.
That's where he's going to be at for this season.
But I think that's going to pay dividends later on. So he looked really good. He was supposed to go higher in the draft too.
He did.
And I believe they were saying it was because of his defensive ability, which, I mean, we're really good at
he's got a fantastic shot.
Oh yes,
that's his strongest point. But I believe that once he gets into the Admirals and he gets into our defensive system,
yes.
Well, I guess our play system. I won't say defensive system as a whole, but our play system, he will get better because Milwaukee is really good at mimicking. I mean, that's your AHL's job. You mimic the parent organization's style, so that way when they jump up, they know how to play.
They fit in the schemes.
Well, that's obviously been working for us, considering all the people. All of a sudden, like Matt. Okay, Matt used to make fun of us years, like multiple seasons
recently.
Ago. Oh, yeah. Like I mean, last year and even the playoff. Like Matt would make fun of us, saying our team is literally a bunch of AHL players. And I remember, I think last year we dressed like, what was it, 7 rookies in a game, and Matt was literally laughing.
I was like,
I don't know how y'all are even in the playoffs. All this stuff.
Y'all did that junk against the Blackhawks. And
yeah.
I'm like, the game's got to be over 10 o'clock because I got to go to bed for teacups in the morning. They got school, you know.
Yeah.
And we had the AHL soup line earlier this season against the Penguins.
Except now these kids have a little bit of experience.
Now y'all got some experience.
All of a sudden, they are, and Ogberg comes out of nowhere. Goudreau comes out of nowhere.
Y'all filled the gaps very well, and those young players shined.
I was so impressed with Goudreau. I hope he stays. I mean, the fact that you get your first
3 goals, was it?
Yeah, in the Stanley Cup final. It's like, to me, if I've been an NHL player, they're like, this is your last season? Done. I'm good. I've scored in the final 3 times.
I mean, dude didn't even have a locker.
Yeah. They had a
have a little cart pulled in the locker.
They had a chair.
For him.
They had a chair, and they were like, are you going to get him a locker? And they're like, no, that's working just fine.
Yeah,
we're going to keep him there.
We're not going to mess up the juju. Because
It makes you think, you know, Daniel and I, and even Matt, I know we all got superstitions. Uh-huh. Like, I didn't wash my jersey, and I bought a playoff shirt, and I wore it to every game and did not wash it.
Joker for...
Yeah.
An extra 2.5 months.
Maybe he needed a bottle of Listerine too.
Yeah. We do that, and we also do this creative thing. We get armbands for food.
Yeah, and we wear them the entire playoff.
We wear them till the end of the play. So whenever our playoff run is over, we cut them off, and you're basically like in tears because it's like you've been on a journey with your team. But
it's like I cut mine off that night, and didn't it take you like an extra 2 days to cut yours off?
I got busy, and I just didn't want
to
cut them off.
Remember, you weren't ready
to break up with your armbands?
Yeah, they were going up to my shoulder at that point. Yeah.
I think he would have broke up with his girlfriend first before he breaks up with the armbands.
It was sad.
Because I remember she was like, Daniel, cut those off. We're done. It's like, I can't.
It was too painful. But.
All right, so one last thing before we talk about here. Do you feel like anybody got overpaid in free agency? Because free agency is that time of year where people get overpaid.
Well, there's a lot of interesting deals. I think the Radulov deal may...
He was one. I was wondering if he was going to get a deal because his asking price apparently was steeper than what people were willing to pay him.
Yeah.
And he ended up landing in Dallas for $6.2 million a year on a 5-year deal.
That's rough.
I think Justin Williams got overpaid the most, though. 2 years, $9 million.
Justin Williams, 48 points last year for $4.5 million. I won't consider that overpaying. But I tell you, I would be willing to overpay if it's an area that I really desperately need. So, like, he's coming from the Capitals. Well, Justin Williams is Mr. Game 7. He's known for being your playoff clutch guy. He's your Michael Jordan in the finals. That's why Washington got him.
And they still choked.
So, since he's got such a high asking price, I guess that's why they wanted to go back. They just get rid of him because it still wasn't working. Or maybe Carolina just really needed him. But apparently, Justin Williams was a part of the Carolina team who won the cup there anyway.
With Lavi?
Yes, that's when LaViolette was the coach there. So I'm guessing they're just wanting to put back together an old team that they had, similar to what Chicago's doing.
Like, let's see, they dumped Panarin. They brought the band back together. And then they got...
And they got Sharp. Patrick Sharp.
They brought Sharp back.
Sharp's back.
Yeah.
Man, what a crazy...
That's a good idea. Put back the team that we won championships with. That's a great idea.
Yeah, but that's also... The team is older now, and they're not going to be as effective. Like, Chicago might come back with the team this season and win the cup. I don't know. But to me, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction to be like, we got swept by the Blues the previous year. Well, we didn't get swept by the Blues, but the Blues beat us, and then the Preds sweep us. I think Chicago pretty much just panicked.
I think this is going to show, like, teams with young talent are the teams that are winning right now. If you think about it, Oilers, my goodness, McDavid comes out of nowhere.
Oilers.
Yeah, he comes out of nowhere. They have tons of young talent. Wow, they made the playoffs.
That's why I like them, because they get the best players.
Yeah, and then on top of that, you've like the Predators. Who knows half the player? Like, literally, nationally, no one knows our players. And
who's
then all
this guy
sudden,
you're
Goudreau,
on the ice? Never heard of him.
This is his first game. He just scored a game-winning goal, of course.
Harry Zolnarchek. Oh, where did that guy come from?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
I guess he's a player, sure. Never heard of him.
And exactly to my point, you see the teams that are going on deeper playoff runs because they have deeper depth as far as young players coming from their farm system. So
I thought everybody did great. I thought it was a great season.
But as far as being overpaid and where people landed, like I said, I'd be okay with overpaying. It just depends on the need. If I really needed a position filled, or I wanted to lock somebody down to a term, a long-year contract, a multi-year contract, or if I needed to replace somebody, it kind of just depends. And I don't really know the situation with why Justin Williams went to Carolina. Maybe they're trying to put back together their team, kind of like how we said Chicago's doing, or if Washington... Is they're the ones I think are panicking, trying to make moves.
Oh, they're panicking big time. But they brought in, like I said,
they
Justin
re-signed
Williams for being clutch. They brought in, what was it, Oshie?
They let go.
Oshie stayed with the Capitals.
Yeah. But
they let go of Alzner, their defenseman, because they re-signed TJ Oshie to some kind of a massive deal. They re-signed him to some kind of a large contract so that they needed money, so they let go of Alzner.
I so wish we could have got Oshie. I would have loved to see him in gold.
That was very expensive, too.
I wouldn't have paid the money for Oshie.
I wouldn't have paid him either. I think that's Washington panicking.
I wanted Thornton, but I'm not paying $8 million a year for him.
But it's like I was reading. It's like somebody said, I can't see Thornton get paid any other.
He's the highest paid. 1 year, $8 million, which is... I mean, yes, he had 50 points last year, but if you look at it, Shattenkirk.
Enough said.
56.
You can't see Thornton in another jersey other than a Sharks jersey.
No, yeah. I mean, like, as much as I wanted him.
It's like this. I always say.
Slap in the face.
I always say they have a tendency in a player's last year. So a player will play 19 years with one team. And then the last year, they'll get traded to some other dumb team. And they'll retire with some other dumb team. And I'm like, you know, he's earned his respect. He's earned his time. Let him play his final farewell tour year wherever. And if it's this year with Joe Thornton, if it's next year, he's probably got one or two. Wherever it is, just let him ride it out.
Very similar to Fisher.
And he's still producing. Like we said, Joe Thornton, 50 points this year. I'm okay with $8 million. He's a freaking staple on my team. I'm not letting him go.
Well, that's why it just made sense for him to re-sign there. Us paying him $8 million to come into our system, do you see what it's just that would not have been good.
Did you see the photo of him signing his contract on his lawnmower or whatever?
Yeah.
That was great. I tell you what, the Sharks did let go of Patrick Marleau, though.
He went to Toronto.
Yep.
I like him. I don't want to see him go. I'm a big Sharks fan.
Well, maybe one day we'll get to see Thornton and Sharks in a Preds jersey. You never know.
No, he's retiring. Shark.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I like the
shark.
Hey, speaking of which, kind of random thought. I actually had a dream last night that, you know, at this point of this recording, I don't think anybody has signed Jágr, and I had a dream that the Panthers in some kind of in a funky contract he signed, that the Panthers actually changed their logo to Jágr's face.
That was your dream.
That was a true story. Yeah, I just dreamed that last night.
True story, bro.
Yeah.
Okay. Goodness. Well, you know, I think it's appropriate on that dream that we go ahead and close it down for the episode. Like I said, this is our first episode. We are a brand new show on Penalty Box Radio. If you don't know who they are, go look them up, penaltyboxradio.com. They are on Twitter at Penalty Box Radio. This is where the show will be. We will be doing bringing you more shows.
Hopefully weekly.
Hopefully bi-weekly. Bi-weekly for sure, but hopefully weekly we can get that going. The email you can reach us if you got any questions. You know, we would love to get viewer questions, talk about stuff. Like I said, this is a fan podcast, so we're coming at this from a fan perspective. You know, people that, you know, love the sport, follow it, you know, basically, you know, love to talk hockey. So that's why we're doing this.
Send us your questions.
Yeah, send us your questions, emails. We'll be getting a Twitter up soon. The email address you can reach us is musiccitygold@gmail.com. Like I said, my name is Kyle. If you want to follow me, you can find me at Kyle Hancock on Twitter. I don't believe you have a Twitter handle, do you, Matt?
I'm old school. I don't have Twitter. Matt doesn't have Twitter. Well, I have an Instagram, but we're going to get an Instagram too.
Yeah, these two jokers don't have Twitter. I do. We're going to get an Instagram set up for it as well. Like I said, the Twitter will get set up by next week. And so, so that's been for the show. Hope you guys like it. And we'll see you guys down the road. Remember, you can find us on penaltyboxradio.com. Thanks, and you guys have a great day. We'll see you on the ice.